We're going to continue our dialogue with David Hagberg about these Needle Tower buildings and some other incredible stories, and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. David Hagberg with us. His latest work, Tower Down, a Kirk McGarvey novel, and he's the star of how many of the books is Kirk the star in, David?
I don't keep track, account, but I think it's around like 21 or 22 and all that. And the guy who I modeled Kirk McGarvey after doesn't read. I don't think Mark is even aware that I modeled Kirk McGarvey after him. I don't think he'd really care one way or another if he did. So it's kind of a hoot. But Kirk McGarvey is, I don't know if you can say, he's a kick-ass guy. If you can say that on radio. But
no, you can't. You can't.
When he walks into a room, it's like my brother-in-law, Mark Morgan. I'm in Wisconsin. And whenever Mark walked into our house, the house could be burning down, the dog could be barking, the wife could be yelling, the kids could be screaming. All of a sudden, there was this aura of calmness just descended over everything. I know I was dressed up one night. We were supposed to go to this. I was presenting something at a writer's group, and so I'm wearing a tuxedo. And I'm all dressed up, ready to go, and my wife is all dressed up in her finery. And Mark came over, and we were living in the same town, up in Madison, Wisconsin. And he walked over to say hi and make sure everything was okay. And he was wearing a pair of blue jeans and a T-shirt. And George, I felt shabby next to him. And I'm wearing this tuxedo and stuff. And that
he's like James Bond. Huh?
Yeah, Bond, James Bond. Yeah, Morgan, Mark Morgan. And I thought, this guy is incredible. I never told him that he was incredibly cool until much later. But he's Kirk McGarvey. Whenever I try to... Because when you're writing characters, you're writing people, they have to be real. You can't make them up out of whole cloth. They have to be real, based on yourself or whoever. And so whenever I wonder what McGarvey's going to do next, I just think of my brother-in-law, Mark. And then it's real easy. He's got, Kirk is an easy guy.
Well, is there some concern about the reality of something happening?
Yeah, I've done a number of books. One, I had Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and all that attacking. And I thought they were going to attack something big. And the Golden Gate Bridge, they're going to put a nuke and bring it down. And I'm thinking of what is quintessentially American that they can hit. And I didn't dream of the Twin Trade Towers. And I would have never in a thousand years, because the people working in the Trade Towers, they were across every ethnic boundary that you could possibly imagine.
They didn't care about that.
So these people, supposedly anti-Christian or anti-American, were killing their own people working there, children and all that. And I never even, sometimes my friends say, well, you've got a depraved sense of adventure or whatever. And even in my depravity, I never, ever in a thousand years dreamed that would happen. But, and I also did a book a number of years ago about bringing down airliners. Did some research on that.
Well, they've done that and they've tried it.
Yep. And also, my publisher is a longtime friend, 40 years he's published me. And I did a book a number of years ago called The White House, which had nothing to do with the White House in Washington, but it's North Korea developing nuclear weapons and missiles. And my publisher called and said, David, I can't publish this book. And I said, why? He said, they're eating grass soup, for God's sake. They're poor. Developing nuclear weapons is just fantastically expensive. It's out of this world. And I said, believe me, Tom, trust me. I believe in this book. And a couple of years later, it came out that North Korea was developing nuclear weapons. And I don't know where this, George, honest to God, if you were said, so how do you come up with this stuff? I haven't a clue, except I read the New York Times every Sunday. I'm not endorsing any newspaper, but I read the New York Times every Sunday. And just about every single Sunday, when I'm done with the Times, I've got ideas for another dozen novels.
You've got a little Tom Clancy in you.
Yeah, well, thank you. That is high praise. Thomas was a strange and wondrous guy, and he ruined writing for the rest of us. Because like Hunt for Red October, when he said, if you go down this companionway, there's six rivets off to the right. You believed it because he had truth in his fiction. And ever since then, when we start writing about nuclear weapons or writing about some street in Paris, we damn well better have it exactly right, because some reader out there will say, you've never been there, you don't know what you're talking about. Clancy would have got it right. And so poor Tom has been long passed away, but his legacy still lives on, which is wonderful. It's absolutely great. And so you saying there's Tom Clancy to me, that's a high compliment, George. Thank you.
Absolutely. Are you concerned, David, that something is going to happen sooner than later?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, the Twin Trade Towers is a real shock to us. So, you know, I'm working, and my daughter calls me from Fort Lauderdale and said, Daddy, did you see TV? One of the towers. Yeah. I said, well, an airplane hit like the 50th story of the Empire State Building back in the 50s, like a DC-3 or something. I said, airports are right, LaGuardia and all that. And then she called me back a little bit later. She said, Daddy, an airplane hit the second one. I said, they're coming at us. So, yes, something is coming our way. You know, I'm not some prognosticator. I can't foresee the future, but we're talking about this right now. And honest to God, George, the hackles on the back of my neck are standing up. I'm seeing this all over the place. And ISIS right now is in trouble. We've got them backed up in a lot of places, and they have to do something spectacular. And these pencil towers, I never knew anything about pencil or needle towers. I didn't really care about the thing. But when you go to New York and you see one of these things, the first thing that came to my mind, my editor's mind too, is arrogance. Is arrogance. I mean, these are impossible buildings. You say there's no way they could stand up, and it's like somebody sticking the middle finger up in the air and saying, "Here, stick this in your pipe and smoke it, guys." And so I mean, it's like somebody standing there in the middle of Manhattan with a great big target on their back. You know, shoot me if you can. It scares the hell out of me, actually.
It is scary. Is your editor Bob Gleason?
Yeah, he sure is.
He's mine
been
too.
My friend for 30 some years.
He is. He's been mine for a couple of my books. And
As a matter of fact, I got a copy of the arc of your book, and I don't know if I'm supposed to say this on radio or anything. It's a you write sort of like Bob in a way, strange and wondrous. you go in directions. I say, now wait a second, and then I read the next chapter. Oh, okay, I see where you're going, and it's just I'm having a ball with it. They're looking for a blurbs or something, and a lot of times I read it about 1,000 words a minute because I have to do a lot of reading, like
speed reading. Like that. Well, that's good.
And I sound like a commercial. You said I was like Clancy, but I can't read you at 1,000 words a minute. I have to slow down because this is way too much fun.
Well, that's good. So, as you look at what's happening around the planet today, based on your observations, we're going to go to calls, too. They're lining up to talk with you here. Based on your observations, what do you think is the next play? What's going to happen?
Well, I think there's got to be attack in the United States because, and I won't say whether I'm a Trump supporter or not, but here's another guy, in effect, sticking his middle finger up at the world and saying America first and stuff like that. And he's kind of saying, like, shoot me if you can. When Obama was president, his first 6 months, he went around the world apologizing for being an American. And that didn't really work.
That didn't work at all.
No, it didn't work at all. And so now we've got the exact opposite with the president saying, you know, shoot me if you can. America first, damn it. Let's try this out for size. Let's make America great again. And again, I'm trying to be as politically neutral as I possibly can be. But yeah, we are ripe.
There's just a lot. There's a lot of hate out there.
Doom and gloom, and I'm really not.
Yeah, but it just seems like they all hate us, David.
Yeah, they do. And I tell you, the reason they hate us is because in this country, if you want to be a millionaire and you really bust your chops and invent like a Facebook or something, you can make it. If God forbid, if you want to be president, if you do things right, You can do it. Women don't have to hide in the shadows. There are women executives, CEOs, and all that. If you want to buy a Mercedes and you can afford a Rolls Royce or a Bentley, God bless, and do it. Or as I was saying, some guy wants to buy a brand new bass boat and he's got a big honking diesel pickup truck to haul it around.
And loves it.
And loves it and is proud of it, parks it in his driveway. What's wrong with that? There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. If you bust your chops, you can get just about anything possible. And that infuriates people. These guys out there, I don't understand this mentality, and I've been writing about this stuff for a long time. They'll go out there and they'll recruit 10-year-old, 12-year-old boys, teach them how to field strip a Kalashnikov, the Russian AK-47, and how to dispassionately pull the trigger and shoot and kill people, or the Boko Haram or whatever, going in and stealing 1,000 or 100, several hundred young girls. They just released some of them, and bringing them back to wherever in the jungle or the desert and saying, okay, you're going to be our wives and our sex slaves. And is there something wrong with this picture? Yes, and it is exactly 1,000% opposite of everything that we in this country and most civilized countries, England, Canada, France, is exactly the opposite of everything we believe in and we stand for. And so it infuriates them, and they say, okay, you bastards, we're going to strike. We're going to bring you down, and it's coming. And that, frankly, again, I sound like a prophet of doom and gloom, and I'm not, because we've been around for 240 years.
I think they're going to gang up on us. I don't think it's going to be one. It's going to be a group.
Yeah, it could be. Amnesty International says there's 10,000 terrorist organizations in the world right now. 10,000.
With one to
mostly they're against
people.
Us. And of course, in France and Germany, any of the free industrialized free world. And I was saying to some group the other day, they are immigrating and coming into our country, coming into France, coming into Germany by the bucket loads. They're not immigrating like that into Iraq or Iran or into China or places like that. I wonder why that is, do you suppose?
Well, part of the problem, I think, too, is the talking out of both ends of our mouth. We want democracy for certain countries, but we don't touch Saudi Arabia. We don't touch Kuwait, which
money,
are run by
money,
families.
Money, George, this all has to do with money. Yeah. And say Pakistan is probably the biggest example. We need places like Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, not so much for the oil, but Saudi Arabia has become, and so has Pakistan, just one of our forward military bases. That so we don't have to fly an airplane, let's say, from Germany or France or the United States to make an attack somewhere. You can fly it just from Saudi Arabia or from Pakistan into Afghanistan. And these countries are not our friends. We're using them, this kind of, I don't know, gunship diplomacy or something. And this is a Chinese curse, and it's a curse that says, may you live in interesting times. And we sure the hell live in interesting times. It's terrible for people, but it's a wonderful for novelists. I mean, somebody says, how do you come up with your ideas? Just look around you. I mean, this stuff is dropping out of the sky. And so I'm writing this stuff, and then some of it comes true. And I was on a radio talk show somewhere around a number of years ago. After this, I had Bin Laden attacking us, and before the
20th. And now his son wants to do the same.
Yeah, I know. And that talk show host said, you know, you're predicting all this stuff. Why don't you start writing love stories? And I said, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. So I don't know, George. I have, you know, I'm writing fiction. I'm writing what ifs this happened, what if that happens, and
yeah, but you're almost like a prophet.
Yeah, I know, and that you know, unintentional. It's just by happenstance, and frankly, it scares the hell out of me. Sometimes, you know, sometimes some of this stuff comes true, and I say, well, this guy really is great. He's this great prognosticator, and frankly, I have no idea where it comes from. I just I read newspapers. I watch the news. Listen to shows like yours, and you are provocative. I mean, you come up with a lot of interesting stuff. And then my brain starts working. I go to sleep or something. I say, what if this happened? What if that happened? What connections can I make here?
Right. You know what? Write a novel on what happens after the power grid goes down.
I already did.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. I wrote it, co-authored it with former Senator Byron Dorgan from North Dakota, rather. He's a Democrat, and I'm a Republican, but I said, I still like you anyway. And it was called Gridlock. And our power grid, that's scary. If you want to get into,
and real.
Get into something like that, it's very scary.
And real.
It is antiquated. It's vulnerable to hacking. As a matter of fact, it's either Russian or Chinese. They're not sure. There are 600 different centers that run the whole grid, and by computers, of course. And all those computers have been infected with a virus that somebody pushes a button and the virus.
They're all gone.
Up and our grid's down, and we've got no electricity. Yeah, no, I did this book a number of years ago.
All right, let's go to the phone calls. West of the Rockies, Jim is with us, Marysville, Washington. Welcome to the show. Hi, Jim.
Hi, George. I wanted to point out that those buildings swaying back and forth, they are going to experience fatigue. The more they sway, the weaker they get.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I also wanted to say that I bought a ticket for the Everett show.
Oh, you're going to be out there?
Marysville.
Great.
It was right next to Everett. And I'm looking forward to meeting you.
Me too, and, then.
Like I've told you before, I've been on the kidney machine 42 years, and if you ever want me to go on your show to encourage people who are just starting out on a kidney machine, quite willing to do it.
Okay, well, that's great. Thank you, and I look forward to seeing you in Everett, Washington, too. We're putting on a live stage show, David, and he's going to be out there.
Fantastic.
That's good. Next up, let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, David, I was going to ask you about, like, what's going on now. It's a lot of this stuff just propaganda, this hacking of emails by supposed Russians is getting tremendous play every day in the press. And then my second question would be, if you look at the movie Jurassic Park, how there was this fancy entrance, and yet it was like an alternate universe beyond the buildings,
What do you think of the hacking and all that stuff, David? It's real.
I'm an old newspaper man. I started out as a reporter, then an investigative reporter.
That's why Gleason likes you.
The whole saw is that a dog bites man is not a story, but a man biting a dog is.
That's
and
a
so
story.
Newspapers, the media, by very definition, don't publish ordinary stories. They publish the more sensational the story, the more they jump on it. And
hold on for a second, David. Already at the break, it's fast going by with you. Wow, we'll come back right to this point when we come back. Okay, welcome back. Our final segment with David Hagberg as we talk about his new work, Tower Down. And David, Joe from Long Island was asking about hacking. It seems to be happening all over the place.
Yeah, it sure is. In fact, that was one of the keys in this book, when we're talking about, there's that counterweight system at the top of these pencil towers that stop them from swaying, and they're computer controlled. As soon as you say any more in this day and age, somebody's computer controlled, then it's obviously, the first thing that comes to mind is, oh, somebody can hack it.
That's right.
And that's what that architectural engineer was telling me about, and he said, in fact, two of them did. And I said, please don't use our names, because this counterweight system, which is like, it's a big 900-ton mass. That's like about 100 African elephants. It's a big 900-ton mass block of welded steel, like a big hunk of this stuff, 10, 20 feet on the side, maybe 10, 12 feet tall. And it's on an oil bath, and the hydraulics can push it left, right, or in any direction.
Jeez.
And so when the wind blows in one direction, this counterweight can move a little bit off to compensate. Well, if somebody hacked the computer and the mass went to the right and then went to the left, then went to the right and then went to the left, pretty soon the building would begin to sway back and forth more and more and more. Sooner or later, it would have to fail. It has to come down. And one of the interesting chapters, when you write, if you're doing it right, if you're writing fiction, you're not, it's almost like automatic writing. You're not typing anything. You're there living it. I mean, you're right there. You really believe that you're in that situation. And so in the beginning of the book, where I have this building coming down, I'm there in that penthouse with other people, and I'm feeling the panic as we realize there's no way out. This building is coming down, and we're going down with it, and furniture is sliding, and we're sliding down the floor, and Manhattan Island out there out your windows is coming to impossible angles.
That's frightening.
It was very, I tell you what, when you read this stuff or watch a movie or something, it's frightening, but when you write it, it's 100 times more frightening. I'm wake up in the middle of the night. My wife says, "What part of the?" In a cold sweat and kind of crying. And my wife says, "Excuse me." Wake up with me and say, "What did you just write yesterday? I mean, where is your head?" And I'll tell her, I say, "Oh, for God's sakes, maybe you take some Valium or something." But it's like writing novels is like living this stuff, really living this stuff. And it's odd. All novelists that I know, all writers that I know of fiction are strange, odd people.
Okay, next up, let's go to Carlos in Carson, California. Hi, Carlos. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening. A couple of points here for David.
Sure.
You know, recently there was a lot of talk of an imminent clash with North Korea. But usually things don't happen when there's so much noise. 9/11, you didn't hear anything before it happened. There was no noise about it. The recent attack here in Syria by Trump, there was no noise about it. So I wasn't really worried, although something will happen down the road because, you know, the Illuminati wants a third world war. And, of course, part of that scenario is supplying everybody with weapons, just like we have a nasty habit of supplying our enemies with weaponry before we go to war. We did it with Saddam Hussein, we trained Bin Laden, we did it with Hitler, we supplied all these people with weapons, then we went to war with them. My question is, then we do the same with North Korea? Didn't Donald Rumsfeld supply them with some kind of weapon components? I'm trying to remember whether that happened or not.
No, so far as I know, it didn't happen since the war is still going on. I mean, we just signed this ceasefire agreement. We didn't sign a peace treaty or anything like that with North Korea at the end of the Korean War in the 50s. But when you're going back to 9/11, there were lots and lots of indications that things were coming our way. They weren't made so public as you might suspect, but there were articles in Washington Post, New York Times, and there's a magazine, a weekly magazine called Jane's Defense Weekly, and that talks about defense, about military, and about intelligence agency, and there were lots, and I used to subscribe to that. There was lots and lots of rumbling. The point is, and there is right now too, the point is that there was no specific thing, whether they're going to hit a building in New York or they're going to hit this or going to hit that. So there's no way. There was just rumblings of something coming on. The National Security Agency monitors 1 billion phone calls a day in a 24-hour period. 1 billion with a B. And there's all sorts of stuff going on there. It's almost like white noise. But there's nothing, there was then, not now, there's nothing specific except that they call them threat levels. The threat level is high or it's rising. But the problem is there's so much going on out there that they can't say, okay, they're going to hit this building in New York, or they're going to do this specific thing. They're going to bring down this airliner. It's just that stuff is coming our way, and the threat level right now is fairly high. Stuff is coming our way. Again, I sound like a prophet of doom and gloom, and I don't really mean to do, because I'm a novelist. I write fiction, and so I look at the real world and just filter it through my kind of strange, weird imagination. But now, there's a small commercial break here. In all my books, and I've written 80 of them, or 81 of them, every single one of my novels has a happy ending. I hate sad.
You do. You're uplifting at the end.
I love happy endings.
Well, that's the way to do it. Let's go now to Mike in Charlotte, North Carolina. Michael, take it away. You're up with us.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, Mike. Thank you.
I have a question for you, George, and this is also for your guest indirectly, and there's a method behind my madness. I have a reason for asking that. When you first opened up, you gave some information about Trump. How could you do that with keeping a straight face and not laughing?
I never laugh when it comes to new stuff.
Well, it's so asinine. This is even before the election. I'll say this because you were military. Your cryptologist was military. I was military, but I'm not the guest. For all the LSs out there and Liptard Snowball, anyway, I need to know is a need to know. You may have a secret clearance, top secret clearance for your eyes only clearance, but it does not necessarily mean that you will get the information that you desire or need. Trump was nothing but a citizen at the time this supposedly happened. No information crossed Trump's eyes, ears, nose, et cetera, et cetera. It's impossible. And if these people want to be deemed fools by knowledgeable people, keep relaying this ridiculous, ridiculous story about how Trump leaked information. That is so asinine.
Well, okay, but this last case is while he was the president. Now they're coming at him for that, claiming that he told them some secret classified information.
So asinine, but you know as well as I do.
But they're not going to let him go. They're going to keep hammering away at him.
I know, and the foolish part of it is they expect everybody else to believe their lies and their rhetoric, and that's so sad. That's borderline psychotic. I mean, it's just so sad. And I just wish people would use their brains and research information before they relay it. The Bible says that it's better to keep your mouth closed, let people wonder if you are a fool, than open it and prove it so.
That actually comes from Voltaire, a French philosopher, and it's one of my favorite lines. I absolutely love that.
Well, and you know what I used to say, David, and I still say it now? Wouldn't it be better to work out agreements with your so-called enemies so that people aren't nuking each other or going to war?
That's why earlier we were talking about, I did a book with Byron Dorgan, who had, with 30 years in Congress from North Dakota, and he finally quit. And I said, Byron, why did you quit? He said, and this was just a few years ago, he said, because nothing's getting done. Everybody is just in Congress just bitching at each other or you're taking shots or making points off, say, counting coup or whatever, and no work is getting done. But your caller, I want to answer one little teeny thing. If you, maybe he's not old enough, but if you remember back to when Ronald Reagan was elected president, there was a hue and cry, there's a howl across the land. How can we elect a B actor, a B movie actor, to be the president of the United States? What are you, crazy? And it turned out to be a very good president because he had the ability to hire very smart people and then shut the hell up and listen to them. And he turned out to be a very good president.
Well, I just hope this president has the ability to listen.
So do I. So do I.
The jury's out on that so far.
The jury's still out. And it is on every single president we've ever had. There's no such thing as a non-controversial president. Think of all the howling and bitching people did about Obama. But I still think about Reagan. And this not a very good actor, but he photographed well. And as the president of the United States, and we did just fine. So I don't know. We, again, it's the Chinese curse. Man, you live in interesting times, and we sure the hell do live in interesting times.
Let's go to Joe in the Bronx. Joe, welcome to the show. Go ahead,
hey,
Joe.
George. How are you, George?
Good.
Yeah, I wanted to speak to your guest, David. What do you think about Trump's idea for a wall? What do you think the long-range effectiveness of such a wall would be in curbing, undesirable, potential terrorists and things of that nature from entering the United States?
See, I'm a Trump supporter because I think we needed something different, but a wall didn't work around Berlin. It the walls never work.
It was Reagan.
Berlin was trying to keep people in.
And
this one's trying to keep people out. But there, these drug dealers. Just talk about drug dealers for a while. They have built tunnels under an amazing piece of structural engineering.
Well, and they fly it into the country.
So a wall, I don't think, would do much of anything.
And they fly drugs into the country.
Well, that's an amazing thing because I did some writing about this, that the drug thing, money laundering, is so important that people buy drugs in this country. They don't, write checks or use credit cards. They use one, fives, tens, and $20 bills. And they, like the drug cartel, Sinaloa, one of them, decided to buy satellite time from the Russians. And they had to send pallets of money, cash money, enough to fill three 747s.
Wow.
Across. And so the sheer weight, literally tons and tons of money, they don't know what the hell to do with it. Right now, the big place is London, England. That's where all the money laundering is going on. Whatever, London, I have no idea.
They have a favorable bank out there, huh?
Evidently, and that will change. I expect it's going to go to Beijing before long, frankly, because there's lots of stuff going on there. But they've got to send these pallets of cash. What the hell do you do with,
well,
with
let
like
me tell
100
you,
tons of $5 bills?
Did you know that I believe the feds have thought that a lot of laundering has been going through Vegas again through casinos?
That could very well be. And another one was Hollywood, not Hollywood itself, but movie theaters all across the country. A lot of people pay for movie tickets with cash. And now what's a ticket? What's a movie ticket cost? Now, 10 bucks or so. And so
a lot of tickets.
If a movie theater, let's say, sells 1,000 tickets this week, they could easily just report that, no, we sold 2,000 tickets. And that extra 1,000 was just laundering drug money. Now, I'm not accusing anybody of doing this, but I'm just saying, if these guys, there's so many billions, billions and billions of dollars involved, that they can hire some pretty inventive people to try to figure out ways. And that's their biggest problem. It's not getting drugs into this country in tunnels or across walls, or it's what the hell to do with all this money.
Right. But, back to the wall. We have a system at Area 51, David, where if a mouse went over a line, you're going to know about it electronically. That's what we need. If you want to have something like that, it's cheaper and it's more aesthetic looking. Just put that in.
We just need to put up a satellite in geosync orbit that's 22,500 miles up that just stays relatively over one spot and do it infrared. And you can watch anything coming across the border by its heat signature. That's, again, if you say a mouse moving, we're going to see about it. And there's a question, George, that I don't have an answer to, but that has been floating around in my head. Why not put up a satellite to do this? Why
talk about a multi-billion dollar
wall, except it's got PR value?
I bet we already have a satellite doing that.
Yeah, I'm sure we do, too. I mean, we got a bunch of them up there, the Keyhole series.
2,400 satellites up there already.
Yeah, and lots of space junk up there. Again, I keep going back to the Chinese curse. We sure the hell live in interesting times. It's fabulous for a novelist. I mean, how do you come up with ideas? How do I not come up with ideas?
Just look at real life.
Yeah, in real life, just look out there. This is just fascinating. But people, Now, again, I'm editorializing. People are saying, oh, we live in terrible times. These are just rotten times. No, they're not. In the 1940s, the entire planet was at war. German submarines were sinking ships off Long Island. They were sinking ships off the coast of Florida. There was war on every single continent on this entire planet, and they were killing Jews, distanced than anybody else, about 5 or 6 million of them in Europe at the time. No, we live in interesting times, but I don't think we live in terrible times by comparison.
All right, my friend, we've got about a minute and a half left. Where do we get your book and give out your website?
Okay, it's Tower Down at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, online. You get it in Kindle or Nook. My website I've sort of abandoned, but they can get a hold of me at Kirk Cullough McGarvey. That's my character name. And my middle name is spelled C-O-L-L-O-U-G-H. KirkCullamagarvey@gmail.com. I will answer any emails as quickly as possible. There's the pages, of course, on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble and any of your bricks. And I love regular bookstores that you can walk in and browse and kind of impulse buy.
But I just hope they stick around.
Yeah, I hope they do, too. Barnes & Noble were closing 20 or 30 a year, and now they're starting to open. And Amazon, I think out your way in Seattle or something, is either did or is planning to open a regular bookstore.
Yeah, that Amazon could do a lot of things. And anyway, David, we're out of time. I want to thank you. Make sure you tell Bob Gleason hello for us. He's one heck of a guy as well. Up next, we're going to talk about pole shifts, global catastrophes, some UFOs, and so much more on Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And if you need to email me, it's george@coasttocoastam.com.